Hey, what's up, guys? This is JB here with Theory 11, and we are here on a long overdue roundtable discussion podcast. So Theory 11 is 17 years old as of, a few months ago? And in the early days of Theory 11, we used to do these things like weekly, bi-weekly, all the time. I think we did over 50, 100 or something like these, maybe 1,000. I just made that up. That's not true. I think it's 100 or something like that of these. We have not done one in a while, so this is long overdue. So A, thank you guys for submitting questions to this. Thank you guys for listening to this in advance. And it is long overdue. I'm really excited to do more of these. And I'm very excited about who we're talking to today. So if you guys are following the Theory 11 magic releases specifically, you're probably aware of who this is and what they've created. But I am joined on the podcast today by his very first podcast appearance ever, by the way, from Benjamin Budzak, who is based in LA, correct?
Yeah.
Are you born in LA, raised in LA, or you moved to LA?
No, I'm from the Chicagoland area. I was born and raised for the most part in Naperville. And then I moved out to LA in 2008 to work in the television business. And I basically, I told my parents, as long as I can afford to live out here, I'm going to stay out here. It's worked out so far, and knock on wood.
Yeah, six years later, yeah?
Yeah, just a couple, awesome. Something like that.
Awesome. Does it feel like 6 years?
It's 2008. And I'm bad at math, despite being a developer. So that should be 2 years would be, I think, 20? Yeah, because 2028 would be 20 years.
Oh, wow. Oh, 2008. Yeah. I thought you were saying 2018. Yeah, yeah. Okay.
Oh, no. Okay. 2008. Okay. I graduated from college in 2008 and basically just moved out here right as soon as college ended.
Amazing. So. Amazing.
Yep.
So obviously, LA, home of the Magic Castle.
Yep.
Awesome.
About 20 minutes away. Yeah.
Oh, wow. So a lot of magic. Do you go to the Magic Castle often?
Yeah, I try and go at least once a month, you know, because I'm paying for a membership. And if I don't go, it's sort of like I'm paying for a thing that I'm not. It's like a gym membership you're not using.
Correct.
So I'll go. And this month has been Halloween. And every year they do just a ridiculous job of redecorating the entire place. The entire inside of the castle looked like the Pirates of the Caribbean. I'm not even like exaggerating. It like there was animatronics and there was effects and clouds and. And so we went probably about 5 or 6 times, I want to say, just because friends of mine were like, hey, can we go see the Halloween stuff? And it's the one part time of the year, for those of you that have never been to the Magic Castle, they're famously known for their dress code. You can't get into the place unless if you're a guy, you have to be in a coat and tie and slacks and nice shoes. And if you're a girl, you got to be in a dress or, you know, formal wear. But this is the one time of year that you can wear a costume. And that is, quote unquote, the dress code for the castle. And anytime I can wear gym shoes at the Magic Castle, I am wearing
gym
shoes.
What was your costume? Was it a gym goer?
We had a few. No. I was one of them. So there's a couple friends of mine, Felix Jones and Andy Diemer, which if you're not in the Magic Castle scene, you probably never heard of them, but they're a pair of magicians. Felix is a mentalist, Andy is a magician, and they have an act in the Peller. And we went for the member party, and my girlfriend thought it would be hilarious for us to dress up as them. So I went as Felix Jones, and my girlfriend went as Andy, and they were both there. Hi. So that was the most hilarious part. So they were honored and flattered that we were kind of giving them a little homage to them.
Awesome.
And then another one was, I keep a couple costumes that are just like at a moment's notice ready. Like one of them is Finn the Human from Adventure Time. It's basically like a shirt and shorts and a backpack, you know, it's like quick to put together. And then last night we went for Halloween and we were three of the five members of the Scooby Gang. So I was Scooby Doo, my girlfriend was Daphne, and my other friend was Velma.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
Yeah, it was a riot.
For those listening to this, we're recording this on November 1st. So this is the day after Halloween. So belated happy Halloween to everyone in Theory 11 lands. We're going to try to cover a lot on this podcast. I think, you know, first and foremost, there's a lot of questions about your background. We're going to get to that in a moment. I just wanted to kind of kick things off from the start here to kind of lead with why we're talking to begin with, which is this brilliant, incredible creation that blew all of our minds in Theory 11, which is Notarized. So can you just talk about, for people that might be unaware listening to this podcast, what is Notarized? What is this most recent release from Theory 11 and Magic App Land? What does it do? Yeah. And what was the genesis of this?
Yeah, well, Notarized, to kind of talk about the history of it, in the midst of the pandemic, I was working on a tool. Pre-pandemic, there was a thing that Illusionist put out called Cypher. I saw this and I was like, there's got to be a way to put this on someone else's phone. And I was in the middle of working with developers to come up with some sort of web app that you would install and then delete. And the whole process was such a pain to load it and unload it that I just buried the project. There's so many things that I've worked on in ThoughtCast that literally is thousands and thousands of dollars of R&D that you just flush. You know, and for those of you that work on magic stuff, know that you'll be working on something, either you'll put in a lot of time or a lot of money or both to get to a dead end. And then you just kind of have to throw the whole thing in the garbage and start over. So that's what I did. And then I tried and casually watched the Apple keynotes just to see if there's anything in there that would be useful for us. And this was the year, I think this was iOS 14, 13 or 14, that they announced the app clip. And I saw that and the light bulb went on. I was like, this is the solution. This is the perfect solution. So I started to put together the Capitalon app. And I tried to add in enough, because there's all sorts of infighting in Magic about who owns what feature and what does this and whatever. And my big rule when it comes to creating Magic is, as long as you're improving the thing, it's worth releasing. So if you're putting out something that is similar to someone else's product, and all of us are close enough that we can, you know, I can send a message to somebody and say, hey, this is what I'm working on. I don't have to worry about them stealing the idea, you know? But I'm like, if you can do this same trick that Cypher was doing with a borrowed phone, that is a killer trick. You know, that's an improvement. And so I put this trick out. And of course, I put it out during the pandemic. The app clip, you have to be in the same, you have to do it at the same, like in person. You can't do it over a Zoom call. And everybody was doing Zoom magic at the time. And so I'm like, you know what? If I don't put this out, someone else will. So I want to be the one to release this. So I put it out and it was a hit. Like a ton of people use it in their shows. It's funny because it's like the first thing I ever put out. So now that I'm like a little bit more knowledgeable as a developer, I go back and I was like, oh, I got to redo this code and I got to redo this because this was the way I knew how to do it, but not the right way, you know?
For people that have no idea, by the way, about, like, you know, not to get into the weeds of the method here, but just from presentationally, from the spectator's point of view, what does this allow you to do? What is the presentation here?
Yeah, I mean, basically you borrow somebody's phone, open their calculator, and it allows you to get a live peek at the numbers. You can force a number. We have some tools that allow you to force the time and date. You can do it's a type of remainder course. We call it the target number, where you can say, I want this number to be the one that everybody goes to. And you can basically do the trick that normally you'd be doing it on your phone and demonstrating, but you can have everybody in the audience do it, follow along as well. But the whole thing is, it's all this calculator magic that you would normally have to do on your device. You're just borrowing the phone and doing it, right? And so I put this out and it got a pretty good response. And so my brain is thinking, what else can we do? What else from Apple's iOS can we duplicate that would make sense? And so I'm like, why don't we do a notes app? And luckily, my buddy GB, who makes an app called Voila, I was talking to him about this idea. And he's like, to make your life a whole lot easier, I already made a fake notes app. Here's the code. So this is like starting point. I was like, oh, perfect. You know, so I didn't have to like make the UI or do anything. I had to make a lot of changes to it as iOS changed, but the bones of it were there. So I put this together and tried it. And like one of the first people who saw it was David Blaine. And he looked at it and was like, I don't get it. I was like, it's a notes peek. And he's like, I don't get it. I'm like, okay, fine. And I was kind of like, maybe this isn't worth putting up. I'm like, you know what? I put enough time and effort into this. I'll put it out. And next thing I know, like everyone, once I launched it, everyone started performing this trick. And it's like, it got a bigger response than Calculon got originally. And you know, the sign of success is when other people start putting the bones of your trick in their trick, you know, imitation's the greatest form of flattery, I guess they say. So, and other people start putting my trick in their trick, and I was like, I guess I'm flattered that, you know, they're lifting the idea, but the response was so kind of, you know, monumental. Next thing I know, I get a call from Worm, and he's like, hey, Theory 11 is interested in making this Theory 11 product. And that's sort of where the ball got rolling on that. And then we kind of joined forces and figured out some of the things that we could do to merge all of our ideas together in one thing. And now it's finally out, you know.
I remember the first time I saw this, I think it was either Dan White showed me or someone else in New York magic scene. That's where I am.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm obsessed with all things impression pads and ways of secretly getting information from spectators and peaks and things like that. And if you think about it, like an impression pad, you know, is so organic because it's just a notepad or a post-it notepad or a spiral notebook. And it seems so innocent. And magicians listening to this, I'm not going to expose anything, but you know how impression pads are, you know, tons of methods of how those work. And they're great, but you know, that requires you carrying around a spiral notebook all day, or you have to carry around a post-it notepad all day, or have to, or worse.
Or potentially have a thing that a battery could go dead.
Correct, you know? Or something like that. And so
I didn't make impression pads, so I get it, you know?
And so what does everyone always have on them, which is their phone? So what struck me so dramatically about Notarized was this was a way of always having essentially an impression pad on you 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. The idea of even doing this on the spectator's phone, we'll get into this more in a second. We start getting into questions, but you know, Notarized, not only are you able to use your phone, you can do this, but you can also have it completely done on the spectator's phone. So you're having, instead of having the spectator write down a name or a word or a number one through a billion, whatever you want to predict or divine, I guess is a better word for it. You can have them write that in their own notes app on their own phone.
That's the power of it at the end of the day, you know, and the real kind of beauty of the whole thing, and this is Capsule and Notarized both because they use the same type of method to get ready, is it takes 5 seconds. It's literally, and we talk about this in the instructions, that you literally borrow the phone, you do a thing that we describe,
a secret thing,
and literally 5 seconds later, you're ready to perform. And when you're done, you just close one thing and you're basically clean. You know, it's like Apple kind of gifted the magic world this really powerful tool to load stuff on someone's phone without them knowing in a way that doesn't break any sort of safety, privacy violations or anything like that.
Yeah, I remember the first time I saw this, and I'm remembering where I was actually backstage at Dan White's show here in New York City called The Magician. And Dan showed this to me, and it was like scary, like the technology of how this works. Again, I don't want to reveal anything on this, but just the fact that you're using the spectator's phone and that you're getting this, you know, information, whatever they want to write down, the name of someone that's close to them that you could never know, or their favorite movie, or a number one through a billion, whatever. And you're getting that information, and they're on their phone, is what makes it, you know, there's so many tricks and, you know, fake this apps and whatever else, some of which, you know, we've worked on a 311, but a lot of those happen on the magician's phone, which automatically injects this doubt in the spectator's mind. We're like, that was amazing, but like, why did I have to use the magic guy's phone? You know?
Yeah. That's sort of the trend of magic apps now, is like, the magic apps that people are putting out don't do as well when it's locked to the magician's phone. And this is kind of a generality, but it seems like when you put out an effect, if you can't do it with the spectator's phone, it really isn't worth putting out anymore. You know,
it's a big roadblock. And I know there's lots of magicians who just, you know, are against quote unquote app magic to begin with, because they're like, you know, the spectator is going to think it's a technology trick, or that it uses Siri or ChatGPT or whatever. But all those things, all those arguments, a lot of them at least go down the drain when you start using the spectator's own phone and it's in their hands the whole time, or as far as they remember the whole time. And the secret sauce all happens on their phone. So that's what's to me so powerful about Notarized, is that in the spectator's recollection, just in summary, they are, you know, you're asking them to open the Notes app on their own phone. They're writing some information that you could never know in the Notes app on their own phone, just to commit it to memory so that they can't change their mind or forget what they wrote down later. And you are able to divine that information that they wrote on their own phone, and you end clean.
Yeah.
And so like having that was like the instant light bulb eureka moment in my brain when I saw that performed for me, because A, it fooled the crap out of me, and B, I just, you know, all those arguments and hesitations I have about app magic and magic being too reliant on technology just dissolved, because I was like, it's my phone. This is my phone. So like, if there's anything sneaky technology wise, how does that work? It's my phone. So
and
I was
what's
so
even
excited.
Better is like the Theory 11 version that released, compared to, because I released this app prior to Theory 11 sort of re-releasing it. And one of the things we changed makes it like even more secret. So in the previous version, when you would finish the trick, there would still be this sort of notes thing on their phone that the spectator could find if they wanted to. And we made a change to it. And again, I won't get into the details. You just got to buy the trick and read the instructions. You'll see all the details. But there's like a big change with the theory version that changes what the spectator sees on their phone when they leave. So this way, it's even more kind of incognito on their device. And it's, I mean, the changes that we made to, and I say we, I mean me, like I'm the guy that wrote the code for this trick, you know, are substantial enough that like, it really changes how you can perform it. Like a friend of mine, Charlie Hewish, gave me an idea, to use the phone. Cause I was trying to come up with a way. My biggest worry about anything electronic or app magic related is reliability. And with everything that I release, I try and A, have some sort of notification to the user, to the magician, when something goes wrong. So that way they'll know as soon as possible so you can change direction or do whatever. And the second thing is to have some sort of a plan B. And even with me, I perform two or three electronic things in my show, and I have backup plans for those things. And so Charlie came to me, and I've been trying to come up with a way to do this trick without needing the second phone. Because the idea with Notarize is that they go on their phone, they type on their phone in their notes, and then you see it on your phone or your watch or whatever. But what happens if the connection breaks? What happens if your phone's dead? What do you do? And the original idea I had was to have it where when the phone went face down, the screen would flip, would mirror, and then you could use a shiner and pull the shiner underneath to get sort of a manual peek at what's being looked at. And I'm talking to Charlie, he's like, hey, I got an idea. There's a way that you could fake the phone locking. And so we came up with this thing, and this is in the theory version if you get it, is where you literally take their phone and you lock their phone, you show the lock screen of their phone, and then you can still get a full peek at everything that's on there. So now you don't even need your phone. You don't need anything else. You literally just borrow their phone and do it. And this was a big reason why people love Calculon so much, is because I personally like the idea of getting the peek without looking at their phone, without touching their phone. But so many magicians would rather just borrow the phone, do the trick, and get all the information off of that device. Now that is in play with Notarize. So you can literally not need your phone at all. Your phone could be dead and in a river, and you can still perform this trick for someone. You literally just borrow their phone and you do this fake, you know, lock sequence, and you get a bonus unlock the phone trick as well as part of it. That is just, it's just part, because of the way the method works, you can then unlock their phone magically and seem to know their passcode, even though you don't really know their passcode.
And so, there's so many other, you know, features and things that we put into the latest version, being able to collaborate with an accomplice,
Telegram
integration, lots of other cool stuff we'll get into in a second. So I want to get to some questions here. We have so many questions. I think there was like 50, 60 questions submitted from the community here. We're not going to get to all of them. I'm going to cherry pick some favorites. That's not to say these are the best questions, but they're just the ones that stuck out to me the most, first and foremost.
And it's also worth mentioning that if somebody is watching this and they got a burning question, I'm like the easiest person to get a hold of, and I'm pretty much an open book when it comes to anything inventing magic. I perform professionally, writing scripts, writing shows, that sort of thing. So literally go to the Thoughtcast Magic website, or if you send an email to Theory, they'll forward it to me, and I'll be more than happy to answer if you have questions outside of this podcast, because obviously we're short on time. But you know, if I have 5 minutes, I'd be more than happy to help whoever's listening to this. You know, the magic is such a small community, and everyone is always so helpful. So it's my little way of giving back, you know?
No, it's awesome. So first question here, let's talk about the beginnings here. So questions from Yeti 8726. I'm a big fan of Yeti, I guess, thermoses. He's saying, nice. I'm joking. How did you discover the art of magic? What was the original genesis of this?
Oh, well, let me put it to you this way. Nobody gets into magic because they have too many friends. Or they're too good at sports. You know? Yeah. I mean, I was a dorky loser kid when I was a kid. And it's funny because most people, when they talk about their influences in magic, they talk about like Copperfield, or they talk about Lance Burton. For me, there was three people in magic that like defined what magic was for me. One of them, one of them is Penn and Teller. I consider them one entity. The second was Amazing Jonathan. The third was Rudy Covey. And I was kind of a child of those early Rudy Covey specials and all of Amazing Jonathan's early stuff. And my dad actually had like videotape of the old Amazing Jonathan, like live at the Improv specials that they would have on HBO or, you know, Comedy Network. And as I was getting into magic, he's like, oh, you should watch this. This is an interesting guy who's a magician, but sort of not. And he's really funny. And so I was like, oh, this is what magic is. And luckily for me, I'm originally from the Chicagoland area. I'm from Naperville. And there was a magic shop in Elmhurst, Bob's Magic Shop, that I found out about, went there once. The first time when you go to a magic shop as a kid, it's always like mind-blowing that this whole world exists, you know? And became part of their youth group of magicians and started to do that. And it really got into it when I was in high school, was going to Magic Live and things. And then when I got into college, I kind of psyched myself out and was like, you know, I can't really do magic for a career. You know, I'm probably going to have to figure out something else. And I really love TV. So I went into television broadcasting, post-production. I make animation, graphic design. I do title design, that sort of thing. Did that. And then I moved to California for that job specifically and worked out here. Didn't touch a deck of cards, didn't have any involvement in magic for almost a decade. And then, and this must have been like 2013, 2014, Blaine put out the Real or Magic special. And I had two cousins back home that loved it. And my mom was like, you know, you're pretty good at magic. Why don't you like brush up on your stuff, you know, when you come out to visit for, it was like Christmas or Easter or something, and show your cousins, you know, some of your magic, and you can, you know, bond over magic stuff. And I was like, okay, yeah, that sounds good. And I go back home and I left all my magic stuff, you know, all the props and all the books and everything at home. And I'm going through the closet and I pull the box out and I open it up and I'm like, psh, you know, and the dust comes off the box. And I'm looking through and I had like old Art of Astonishment books and like the Mnemonica books and all these old lecture notes. And I was like, what in the world did I give up? You know, I couldn't believe it. And so I kind of got back into it. And I basically missed out on magic during the time when they transitioned from like DVDs to downloads. And so I started looking at what was available again and all these downloads. And I was like, and then I started getting introduced into like Dan Ortiz. And I got introduced into like Darren Brown stuff. And I kind of just fell back into it. And then this was at the same time that Rudy Covey made his comeback. So he was performing again. And I was like, that was the life goal, was to see him live. And then he's doing a show. And at the end of his show, he's like, oh, by the way, these tickets for my show, if you take them to the Magic Castle, they will be your entrance to the Magic Castle. And I was like, that sounds cool. And I go to the Magic Castle. And that place blows your mind as a magician, you know, and you run into people there that are names in magic. You know, it's like there's a magic convention every week at that place. So I was like, I got to get back into this, and did the audition, passed the audition, started to think I was going to be in sort of a full-time performer, but it didn't really work out. Like it's just hard. It's hard to break out in LA. LA is for people who are already established and already have a following and already have, you know, stuff happening. It's not a place to be bad. You know, it's a place where people who are already good can be great. And so I was starting kind of from ground zero, but I used the castle as my performing ground. You know, it's one of those places where if you have a membership, you can literally perform anytime during the week for a lay audience. And even to this day, when I have stuff that I'm working on that I just need to put up in front of people to see if it's any good or beta test, I take it to the castle. And I even joke, I'm one of the few people at the castle that takes stuff that I'm hoping it fails, because if it fails for me, I can take it home, fix it, bring it back. And then once it works enough times in a row, and once I feel comfortable enough performing it, then I package it up and I take it to Magic Live. I sell it to you guys to put into your show. You know, so that's like the life cycle.
Yeah, it's sort of like a Comedy Cellar in New York City.
Similar.
Or Magic, yeah, where you see guys like Chris Rock goes there to test out new material and get lots of reps in.
You got it. Yeah. And even compared to comedy, it's my comedian friends are jealous, because even in LA, and this is New York is the same, if you're a comedian and you're just starting, you're lucky if you can get 3 or 5 minutes. And those 3 or 5 minutes are in front of other comics. So you really can't get a good read on if the material is working or not. But with Magic Castle, you get 20 minutes and the audience is, I'd say 95% of the time, is all a lay audience. It's all normal human beings. It's a civilian audience, you know? You're not performing in front of other magicians or other comedians or other entertainers per se. You know, maybe there's an actor in the crowd or something. So you can really get a handle on if the material is good or not. And you can be, it's the place to be bad, when you're just starting, you know, and and I'm sure somebody's going to be like, nobody should be bad at the Magic House. But to be honest with you, it's like I put new stuff in between stuff that I know that's good just to try it. Because I know if something goes wrong in the Magic Castle, everyone's going to be like, pat me on the back. You know, everyone at the audience is pre-won for you. Everyone is so stoked to be there and so stoked to see magic, you know. Yeah.
It's where the best magicians I know go to get reps in. And like, that's how a comedian's going to make a good joke to a great
joke.
And how even, you know, some of the most polished magicians like Justin Willman can do 21 shows at the Magic Castle and get a huge amount of reps in. And a routine can go from, you know, like a rock and a tumbler starting pretty rough. And then you realize, oh, the audience laughed at this, or they reacted better than I thought at this. So they didn't react at all to this. And then you can only learn, there's only so much you can practice in magic in front of a mirror or in front of a webcam without seeing, hearing face to face the audience's reaction. Yeah. Let's keep going here. Because you're talking about Rudy Kobe. There's a question from Stephane H3. I'm assuming this is gonna be a Rudy Kobe thing. What's the first magic trick that you remember that made you go, I want to be serious about magic from now on?
Whoa.
Was there one thing that just like hit you of like, yo, whoa, I still remember the first time I saw that?
Well, when you're a kid in the Chicagoland area, the place you start in magic is the Marshall Brodeen 100 trick kit. You know, it's got the plastic cups and balls, and it's got the paddle and the ink to water or whatever.
Ball and vase.
Yeah, and exactly. Yeah. And it's all fun, but it's all plastic, you know? And so my mom's friend, I call her an aunt, Auntie Annie, lived in Elmhurst by Bob's. And so she would swing by the shop and said, what's a trick that a third grader could do that's still fooling? And Bob showed her one a trick. And it was a silk to rope. It was a red silk. You pull it and it's a rope. And this is in the zeitgeist of magic. So it's okay revealing it, but essentially it's a rope with a core and the silk is tied on one end. So you just pull the core back and shows the silk and then shows the rope. And this was the first like, oh my God, magic moment that I remember having when she showed this to me. And she's not a magician by any stretch of the imagination, but she performed this trick for me. And I was like, oh my God. And even then, like, and again, being in the Chicagoland area, we had magic masters at Navy Pier that my mom worked downtown, and she would occasionally stop by there and say, hey, what's a trick that I could, you know, that my kid is in the fourth grade or fifth grade, what's something that he could do? And that's where I got into, what are those coins called? Scotch and soda coins, things like that.
Yes.
And so, and you go there and your mind's blown by that magic shop, you know? So that was like the first thing. And then the first kind of professional magic moment, as far as like developing skill in magic, I was at Magic Live in either 2001 or 2004. And I remember seeing a lecture by Coach Chick Himla, and he was demonstrating what we now know as the Roadrunner call. And nobody knew what it was. He was just working on it at the time, and he did it. And the air just got sucked out of the room when he showed this deck, red and black separated. And I was like, that is the most astonishing thing I've ever seen in my entire life. And so I literally chased after him after the lecture. And I said, when is that going to be available for us to learn? And he was like, I'm going to put out the DVD in another couple months. Just keep an eye out. It's going to be in every magic shop, so just get it. Obviously, came out. I got it. And I was like in high school at the time, so I had nothing better to do. And I just practiced this Roadrunner call forever and ever and ever. I got it's one of the few card magic moves that I can do really well. And then when I stopped doing magic for a decade, when I got back into it, it was like riding a bike. I could literally pick up a deck of cards and do the Roadrunner call as good, if not better, than I did way back in the day. So, and that's the one thing whenever people come to me, because I teach magic classes, I do private training and that sort of thing, and they say, what do we need to learn to do proficient card magic? That's the first thing I tell people to learn, is learn a good call and learn the Roadrunner call. Because a lot of card, I mean, that move by itself, you can do a lot of magic with, but if, let's say you're performing something with a stack, and the stack gets out of order, the last thing you want to do is hold the deck of cards up with the backs of the audience and be doing them, like changing them facing you. It's much better to just hold the cards out and show the cards are mixed and do all the rearranging under with a cull than to do where it just looks like you're not doing anything, like you're just showing the cards off. So that's good advice to anybody that wants to get into card magic. That Roadrunner call DVD is super good. I don't know if Theory sells it, but
We don't, but I remember seeing, I think it was at Magic Live or something, yeah, when I was very young, seeing Kostya perform that, and I remember it. So it was,
yeah, one thing.
There was a question, the next question I was actually going to get to was from Will Tupper.
Cool.
But I think you just answered it. And he was saying, is there a Magic product, whether that's a book or a video, that remains one of your all-time favorites or most instrumental in your Magic career? I think you just answered that. Is there that anything is other than that?
100%. Yeah, we'll keep, that one and our astonishment books. It's crazy how well those books have held up over time. And it's so crazy when you, if you read those books, if you read them, you can see how David Blaine sort of started his career with, because Paul worked with him and a lot of that stuff was in the Blaine specials. And same thing with the David Berglas book. If you read that book, you can see literally Darren Brown's career in that book, how much influence he had. So it's, those are worth reading if you ever. I mean, there's so much Magic to read. Yeah, just read as much as you can. That's the best advice I can give anybody.
Let's talk about creating.
Yeah.
Amit R is asking, when you're creating a new trick, do you think of the method or the medium or the end result first?
That's a very good question. When I'm working on a new thing, there's actually a couple of ways to go about this. The thing about creating magic is there's no right way to do it. Sometimes you see a piece of technology and you go, that's a magic trick. And you just, it's a race to get it out, you know? Because a lot of times when you see a new piece of technology or a new feature or something like that, the thing in the back of my mind is like, I can't be the only one thinking about this, you know? So it's sort of like a race to put out that trick. And I'm not a huge fan of tricks that are like that because things need time to incubate. And there's this kind of, it's a weird, the rule in magic in general is the first to put it out sort of gets the ownership of it. But there's no intellectual property protection in magic. You know, that's kind of why there's so much crossover. And creators of magic are the only ones that kind of get on each other about stealing features and things like that. And I try and be really good about at least crediting the people that invent specific things in electronic. It's so hard to track who invented what in electronic magic because it's moving so fast. Like, new stuff comes out so often and it's like hard to keep up with all of it. And I have friends of mine that are much younger than me that are much better at that. I can go and be like, hey, do you know who created this? And at least I can keep the record. But my biggest thing, at least when I'm working with magicians who are performing professionals, the problem most magicians have when they are working on their own magic and trying to create shows is that they start sort of, they go in the opposite order. They start with the method and they think too much about the method. And when they see a really great method, then they're going to try and come up with a trick that works for it and then write a story around that. And it's like a painter who is too obsessed with the brand of paint. You know, Harrison Greenbaum has a whole book about this. And when you're creating magic, you really need to think about what you're trying to say. You know, you have to really think about what you want the audience to leave with first, and then figure out the story that you want to tell that goes with that, and then figure out the trick. And the thing is, when you do it that way, you lend yourself to potentially inventing new magic that then you have to come up with a method for, where you have a trick that you're like, oh, this trick doesn't exist. I have to come up with how to do it. But yeah, usually when I'm coming up with magic, it's sort of a combination of seeing what's available and what would work, how to exploit it in a magical way, and also sort of this would be cool if it was possible. Like an example of this is a trick that I was showing a couple of people at Magic Live, and if you're interested in this, give me a shout. But essentially the effect is it's an Etch-a-Sketch prediction. So literally anything the audience member thinks of, it could be an animal, it could be it could even be a picture of a loved one, obviously a word or something like that. It's in a box on stage, you have it in plain view the entire time. You open it up and inside is an Etch-a-Sketch with this thing drawn on it. And you can literally give the whole thing away. You know, you can give away the box, you can give away the Etch-a-Sketch. It's all examinable. And you literally just go and buy Etch-a-Sketches to perform this trick. This is kind of an example of a thing where I'm like, I've always wanted to do an Etch-a-Sketch prediction. But I want to, the only real way that exists currently is one where you can't really give the unit away, either the prop, the Etch-a-Sketch itself, it's gimmicked, or there's an overlay that goes onto it. I published a thing in Genie about sort of a transparent film that you print something on and then you slide it and it will reveal an image. It took a couple of years and thousands of dollars later, working with mechanical engineers and software developers, Python developers. And now this is a trick that Copperfield, he came by the booth at Magic Live a couple of times to come and see it. And I've been performing it in my show regularly. And it's jaws drop when people see this, especially when I go, here you go. This is for you. This is a gift. Enjoy. And jaws drop to the floor. So hopefully you'll get to see it one of these days. I've been trying to talk to Dan to do it on Fallon. So maybe you might see it one day on Fallon. Yeah. Who knows?
I know a guy. That is a great question.
Hopefully I answered it. I don't know if I did or not.
No. It's a great question. And honestly, I think this similar questions have come up on previous podcasts we've done, and every creator has a different answer because everyone's process is different. There's no right way or wrong way. Some people, just like a musician, you know, sometimes the full lyrics might come to them, like you're Taylor Swift and you just got it in a dream or something. And other times it might be just a melody and they got to make lyrics to fit the melody and vice versa. There's no right or wrong way. It's whatever works for you. And honestly, there's probably no one way for any one performer or creator. Even the most prolific creators, sometimes they're going to think of a great method and have to figure out what's the routine in the presentation for that, and other times they'll think of a great presentation and have to innovate a method to make that possible. Let's keep it going here. We got a few more questions in the time remaining here, a few more minutes. Farouk is asking, for someone looking to buy a new mentalism effect, routine, trick, how would you convince them to buy Notarized instead of a traditional impression pad? Interesting question for someone that also sells traditional impression pads and devices.
Yes.
So if you were lobbying for Notarized for sake of this question's answer, what are the advantages of Notarized, you would say, over a traditional mentalism?
Well, I'll preface pad with this. And I do ThoughtCast Magic is truly a side hustle for me. I have a real job. I'm slowly transitioning to doing magic full time. For those of you that don't know, the entertainment industry in Hollywood has just been down in the dumps for the last couple of years, and my normal clientele has been diminished so much that I'm like, I should probably look into doing magic full time as a real thing, because this work may not come back. It's kind of a scary thing to be thinking in the back of your mind. So I say that by also saying I'm like the worst salesman. I'm the guy at the magic shop that won't sell you the trick because you're not ready for it. You know, that's kind of the way I think about magic. And Michael Weber, his best advice is for anyone who is new to magic, that you are banned from using electronics for 1 year. When you start doing magic, you are electronics are off limits to you for 12 months, and you have to learn all of the manual ways of doing everything, because you have to develop that basis of how everything works and how to like use the things that are like the traditional methods, and to develop the onstage personality first, right? Once you get past that first year, the big thing about Notarized is the fact that it's always there. You know, you don't have to be wondering, oh, do I have my pad? Do I have my pen? Do I have my special pen? You know, most impression pads, mine included, require a special pen. Do I have a stuff? All that stuff just goes out the window. You literally just borrow the phone. And even before, you had to have your phone ready and internet and all that stuff. You don't even need that anymore with the Theory 11 version. You literally just borrow someone's phone, do the secret thing, notes opens, and you're ready to go. And it's great because a lot of magicians do not perform full-time professionally. Like, it may be aspirationally, but a lot of them are really performing for their friends, performing for their colleagues, performing here, there, and once in a while. And they don't really have a sort of scripted show. They're very much kind of like improv-ing it and, you know, and riffing and getting out of deck of cards and doing stuff, you know, here, there, and everywhere. And this is like the perfect thing for that, because it's just ready. You know, it's just, you can do it. You don't have to worry about setting it up. And the effect is so kind of simple. Like, the basic thing that I've been doing when I first started testing Notarized was literally just I'm going to put in a word, I'll give you the phone, you delete the word, put in any word you want, and I'll show you how I influence you to think of the word you thought of. And I do a little bit of A to B translation like this. And a little, and I mean, I have a background in improv. I did UCB for years. So that sort of thing doesn't scare me too much. But, and I would just kind of just connect the two things in the most ridiculous way possible and use that as the method. And it's like just the perfect go-to trick when you have no deck of cards, no nothing, except, and you don't even have your phone, you can still perform this trick. As long as you, there's one secret thing you need, but you don't even need that potentially. You just need a URL and you can do it too.
It's an awesome answer. I think you're correct that, you know, the advantage of notarized and having just magic apps in general that enable you to do things on your phone or even the spectator's phone, yeah, in this case, you just always have it on you. It's, you know, there's been times, you know, remember, you know, years ago, you know, when we first released, and even, you know, since then, the Rising Card app by Chris Kenner, and, you know, me being at a restaurant with whoever, and I've got nothing, yeah, on me, and someone's just like, show me a thing. And if you always have this in your back pocket, like Rising Card app, you can always perform it at a moment's notice. In this case, you know, you're able to divine information from the spectator. That doesn't even have to be a trick in and of itself. That can be one part of something else you're doing over the course of a whole, you know, evening. And you have this information, yep, now, you know, in your back pocket, maybe, yeah, not literally. And what power that, yep, gives you, it's incredible. Like you've got their, you know, loved one's name in your head, or what movie they were thinking of, or their phone number, or there's so many things you can do with this. And I, yeah, think that's the other thing I love so much about Notarize, is it's not like there's one trick. There's obviously great tricks, like, you know, Rising Card app is a good example. It's a great,
yeah,
trick. It is a great trick. It's very deceptive, but it is a, you know, one routine. There's not like there's a million things and ways to perform Rising Card app, whereas Notarize isn't. You know, you can perform it as just mind reading, mentalism, yeah, divination, but where I think it really shines in the most creative executions and presentations I've seen people using Notarize is when it's not the sole means to the end. It's like one piece, yep, of a larger routine. So even if the spectator like reverse engineered the whole routine, this was just one part of the method. And in magic, you know, the best performances I've seen of this by like Dan White and people, it's not that they're using it as the sole method of a routine. This is like, you know, stacking methods and they cancel each, yep, other out. And that's how you like debilitatingly fry a spectator, is you combine methods. Because in the spectator's mind, they're always looking for what is the secret to that, yep, trick? What is the secret to the trick you showed me? So if the answer to that question is there is no secret, there are secrets,
yeah,
plural, and Notarize becomes a part of that puzzle, it's you know, game over 100%. For the spectator. That's when they'll melt down.
And the one thing that is also kind of part of Notarize too, that sort of expands what it does, is there's a thing that I released that's called Actions. And essentially what Actions are is a way to take any one of the ThoughtCast products. So Calculon, Notarize, the ThoughtCast app, we have another RFID product called OmniSense. And you can take the information, because essentially there's two kinds of magic apps. There's magic apps that gather information, and there's magic apps that deliver information. Sort of the gathering and then the spewing out of the information. And that, I mean, mentalism at the end of the day is you're either putting a thought in someone's head or you're taking it out. Those are the options. And so we created, and I wanted to make something that was sort of universal with all of our products. So we made this app that, and this is like a combination of me and another developer who helped make the ThoughtCast app what it is now. And essentially it ties into everything else. So if you have another magic app that maybe has been sitting on a shelf for a long time, like a good example would be like Earworm by Mark Kirstein, right? The idea of that trick is any thought of song plays on a spectator's phone, right? Now, instead of having to load that information onto the phone, you can now borrow someone's notes and say, type in the name of a song and an artist of one of your favorite songs. Okay. And you borrow another phone and you say, I'm going to open up a song and I'm going to like hum it in my head. And I want to see if I can guess the song, and they type it in. And now Notarize will deliver that information to Earworm, and Earworm will then send it to the spectator's phone. So now you can now take these other things that you've kind of like have sat on a shelf and been like, what do I do with this? Now it's a way to, instead of having to input that information to Earworm directly, you can now gather it through Notarized and deliver it to Earworm with the Actions app as sort of the conduit between those two products. And like I said, works with a ton of stuff. You can see all the features on the website, but like we're talking the printers, like Joel Miranda's legacy wallet printer, like a bunch of Kirstein's apps, Inject, you know, like the stuff that you guys are using probably for all your stuff. You can now have kind of breathe new life into those with Notarized and Actions as part of the pipeline.
It's awesome. All right. So one last question here.
Yeah, let's
from
go for it.
Signature. End it with a bang here. This is a good awesome. Question. I think tease this up. How do you think the world of magic will continue to change with technology? So with obviously what Notarized enables you to do, where do you see this? You're seeing, you know, you're a tech guy. I'm sure you see everything that Apple's coming out with.
Yeah.
ChatGPT, you know, the things that technology now enables you to do. And you can have a whole 3-hour conversation with ChatGPT with no latency.
Yeah.
And it sounds so realistic. Like, what is in your, you know, I know you're not actually a mind reader. You just
you never know.
Are you optimistic? Do you think that there will continue to be the trajectory that's always been, which is that magicians will be the first to adopt, you know, new technology principles? There's a whole
100%.
Magicians have always been the first, dating back to what Robert Houdin and Georges Méliès. Magicians have always been among the first to adopt and really embrace new technology and not like shy away from it or be afraid of it. You know, it's like Alexander.
Man, who knows? Yeah, I was just about to say.
Yeah,
I saw the hat in Copperfield's warehouse. Like, it used induction coil technology in what, the 1800s? Like this thing that we use to charge our phones now. He was using back then to power his earpiece. Like, it's crazy, you know?
So do you see that trajectory continuing? Or do you continuously get excited about new technology
100%.
And still think, like, how can I leverage that for, you know, magical purposes?
Oh, 100%. It's one of those things where it's kind of exciting and frightening at the same time, because a lot of times I'll see something that I'm like, I have an idea for this. And I can't, and I don't have the know-how to develop the product for it fast enough to get it out to market. And so, and somebody else will beat me to market and I'll be like, that's such a good idea. You know, the best ideas in magic are ones that you see somebody else put out and you're like, damn, I wish I put that out. You know, that's such a good idea. And for technology in general, I think the big kind of opening up with ChatGPT and all these sort of language learning models is that it's allowing people who aren't tech savvy to develop things on their own. And I think that's really a cool ability, because of the fact that a lot of the struggle of magic compared to like a singer or compared to a comedian is we have to build stuff. You know, we have to like we have to write the code. We have to build the prop, you know, and you might put all this time into building the thing only to realize it doesn't work or it doesn't fool anybody or whatever else. And so luckily with this, and I mean, I'm using ChatGPT when I develop because of the fact that I started to create stuff for ThoughtCast in 2017, working with developers. And sort of when the pandemic happened, I was like, you know, I'm sitting around, the government is paying me to do nothing. I might as well make good use of the time. And so I literally bought one of those $50 complete iOS training kits off of Udemy. And I did it like a college class, did every lesson, did every exercise, every workshop, every part of it to try and learn how to do it, with the only goal being to be able to look at the code that other people were writing and know, see if it was good or not, to be able to sort of like tell if I'm getting my value from people that I'm hiring. And when I finished it, sort of Calculon was the first thing that I just produced as a result of doing that class. But now what's ending up happening is, because of the fact that I very much consider myself, and this is like 2020 on, a junior developer, even though I've been doing this semi-part-time since 2020, there are so many things that I'm like, okay, there's this one thing that I just don't know exactly how to write the code, that the original way to figure it out was to just Google it and look on Stack Overflow and see if somebody has a solution. But now you literally just go to ChatGPT and you say, hey, how do I do XYZ with ABC? And it will just... And then it'll just deliver all the code to you, and then you can just copy and paste it. Does it work every time? No, obviously. But I have at least enough of a background that I can go in and figure out what's not working and change it without too much of a problem. I think this is going to be the big door to open for everybody that has an idea but doesn't potentially have the funding or potentially have the know-how to build it, that they can at least put together the prototype and perform it without having to go through the hoops of having to hire developers and pay thousands of dollars to get something built to see if it's worth pursuing. And then if they do it and it's worth pursuing, then they can go down the road of hiring the developers, building the real thing and doing the thing. And
yeah,
it'll create some interesting and possibly more polished magic as a result. The future, nobody knows what the future holds at this point, but I'm trying to be as optimistic as possible about it.
No, I think like circling back to one of your answers from earlier about the Magic Castle and being able to rapidly test out new material and seeing if it works or not, and not being afraid of, you know, failing or chipping away at something like a sculpture, making it better and better over time, having, you know, AI functionality like that to apply the same principles to like app-based magic or technology-based magic tricks. Because like, even if you can use ChatGPT and OpenAI to create a, you know, magic app that works 70% of the time, just enough you can like see if it works. Yep. Like if it takes you 20 minutes to get a rapid proof of concept that you're like, I know this is not bulletproof yet, I would never sell this, but at least I just wanted to see it. I want to perform it for my friends at dinner tonight and see if this works. Having like AI-based technology innovation, being able to create magic apps and magic, you know, web apps even that do things like that, that would otherwise have been impossible. You can't rapidly prototype something like you can like a card magic trick. You can make a gaffe,
yep,
you know, in an afternoon and see if it works. Now you can apply that same rapid prototyping trial and error to technology-based magic. And I think that's a game changer.
Yeah.
The more and more that becomes, you know, public knowledge and publicly accessible and so inexpensive.
Yeah.
You know, for $20 a month, you can get OpenAI membership right now.
Yeah. And you know, the thing that I'm seeing more and more, which is kind of neat, is people are utilizing there's an app in iOS called Shortcuts. That's essentially, I call it coding for babies, because it's like, it is the foundation principles of development, but in a way that,
if this, then do this,
pretty much.
If this, then that.
It's just a lot of like block.
If this happens, do this.
Exactly. And so a lot of times when somebody comes to me and says, hey, this is my idea, my advice to them is build the prototype in Shortcuts first. And then if that works and if it's worth doing, then you can roll it out as an actual app and make it something that is polished and professional and ready to sell. So that's like a great foundational tool. And there's something Kale Morelli was talking about. I can't think of the name of it. I have to look, but there's essentially like it's kind of like one step up from Shortcuts that allows you to build web apps that are they're not fully feature filled, but they're sort of, they have a lot of functionality to them that you can build potentially something like a Capsule or Notarize, just a very bare bones version, just to see if it's right. And then obviously if it works, then you can move on, but it won't have all the features. That's the one thing that I learned about creating stuff for the general magic market and development, is that there's so many things that you don't think about that you have to consider when you're making a trick for release. That's an iOS app. Things like saving settings, you know, like the settings don't just get saved by default. You have to set all that up manually. Talking to cloud servers, any sort of data IO, all that has to be set up. Error messages, like whenever there's an error message, you have to be verbose with the error messages. And even with the one of the things I did under the hood with the Notarized app is every error message, I put an error code on it. So should somebody hit an error message, it'll say contact support and give them XYZ error code. And I can then just go in the app and see which error message sprung up. So yeah, it's crazy, because like if you're making something just for yourself, you're only going to use it in this one use case and that's it. But then you make something that you're going to sell, and you give it to somebody to use, and they use it in a way that's completely unexpected, and the app crashes and it doesn't work. And you're like, oh, I didn't even think that would be a way to use it. So that's that's more good advice if you're looking to make magic apps, is to find a core group of friends of yours that are magicians that you trust, and have them try it out first, because, you know, they're going to find ways of doing stuff. Like Ron Pink found a way of using Telegram that I didn't expect. And I was like, oh, that's really interesting. And so we set up some sort of automatic Telegram messaging support in the app as part of it, because it was like no sweat off my back to add it, you know? And same with like the inject support too. It's one of those things that was like, oh, this, you know, this is a must have for us. And, you know, it's a little bit of work to put together, but there's so much functionality that's added just by being able to call an API from Notarize and send that information to the API or gather it from the API. Again, connecting it with Inject, WikiTest, and all those other tricks. It's just another sort of piece in the puzzle of the overall effect that you're trying to build that you can then make it more deceptive through using Notarize. So,
yeah, I think that's kind of buttressing what I said earlier. It's just Notarize is like a toolbox where there's so many things you can do with this. You can use it just out of the box and perform it as a divination effect, but there's so many things, and not to mention the integrations that you can do with it as this ultimate weapon you've got in your pocket.
And I mean, that's like my mantra is when I build this stuff, I build it for me. And when I build a magic trick, I want a thing that does as much stuff as possible. And we all know of all these magic apps that do one thing and you're like, okay, I did the trick. That's nice, you know, but I always like building stuff that you can then go back to and use in a different way for a different trick and still have the same thing, you know, still, and not have to go buy another trick. You can then use this thing in different ways and like constantly put it into your show in a different way that sort of breathes new life into it. That's always been like the goal for me, is to really have as much functionality as possible. So each thing, if you think about every product that ThoughtCast has released in the general sense, there's a few things that this doesn't apply to, but in the general sense, every trick is like, it's like a thumb tip, you know? The things you can do with it are sort of limited only by your imagination. And there are so many options that I think that's the one thing is sometimes people who aren't really tech savvy get scared. And so the kind of balance with that, whenever I develop stuff, I try and make it as simple as possible. It's not by accident that the UI of all the ThoughtCast products looks exactly the same and works exactly the same. So if you own the ThoughtCast impression pad and you buy Notarize, the buttons are basically the same. They're in the same spot. The instructions are in the same spot. So that way you don't have to kind of learn the UI and figure it out. It's just really easy to use. But that's the one thing that magicians, the ones that are sort of tech shy, are always sort of overwhelmed with all the things you can do that they don't know what to do with it. And for those of you that fall into this category, my best advice is to get it and just try it. Just the way we give you a bunch of routines that work right out of the box, but just to try it out and see if it's sort of the right fit for you, knowing that you can go back and make changes and change your routine and change how the app works to make it fit whatever you want it to do without having to worry about it being like overly complex.
I'm excited for you guys listening to this to play with this.
It's so fun.
It's so powerful. There's so many things you can do with this. I'm really proud of it. I'm thankful that we were able to be a part of it here with Ben. I'm thankful.
Likewise.
Thank you to for jumping on the podcast today. Thank you.
What a blast. Yeah,
and thank you for you guys listening to this and all the members who posted questions in the forums. There's a lot more I wrote down, like Braden 0309 had a great question, but we didn't have time to go through all of these. We tried to get through as much as we could, but feel free to post questions in the forums. Ben and I check all the time. And like Ben said, he's very accessible.
And we have Podcast Facebook group. It's open to anybody who's a magician. You don't need to be a customer or anything. Just hit the join button. Just mention, you know, that you're not a customer. There's a couple questions in there, but I usually say yes to anybody that is like magic or at least interested. So that's a spot that you can come to. But like I said, I'm so easy to get a hold of. hello@thoughtcastmagic.com is go straight to me. You know, so like I said, if you ever have a question or if you're like, I have an idea for something and I want to figure out how to make it, I'd be more than happy to give you some unfiltered advice on how to actually produce it, whether I'm the guy that helps you produce it or not, you know, because like it's the things that get in my way. It's like you don't know what you don't know, you know, and anytime I can fill in the gap for someone to help them, I'm totally down. You know, magic is a small community, and at the end of the day, we all kind of have to help each other to get the thing we want out of it. So you know, I love talking about this stuff with people, obviously doing podcasts now.
No, so, super inspiring. Yeah. And obviously like that spirit of community and like rising tide raises all ships, I think is how we continue 100%. To progress and innovate as an art form. I mean, certainly Notarize built on top of the shoulders of other impression pads and routines and other things that have come before this, low tech, you know, concepts that have come before this. So I'm excited to see where the future holds here. Thank you again, Ben. This has been awesome. We will get this posted very soon. We'll chat more with you guys soon. Thank you again to every member who is listening to this and more to come. Thanks so much.
Thanks again, man.
Awesome.